We thank you for listening to the weekly sermon of First United Methodist Church, Missouri City, Texas. We're a church that's making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. For more information about the church and its ministries, or how we can pray for you, visit us on the web at fumcmc.org. If you desire to make a quick contribution in support of our ministries, you can text to give. Simply text the amount you want to give to 281-369-4870 and follow the instructions. And now, as you listen, we hope that you find this podcast meaningful and transformational in your journey of faith.
So, those of you who don't know, I grew up in New York, and we lived in this townhome type thing. I don't know what to call it. It's like a townhome type thing with three floors, three different families, one family on first floor, second floor, third floor. We lived on the second floor of this thing, townhome thing. I don't want you to think it was fancy, because it was not. And just so you know, there was a front stoop. You know what a stoop is? You people in Texas call it a porch for some reason. Don't get why, but that's your privilege. You couldn't play stoop ball on a porch, so we play stoop ball. If you don't know what that is, Google it. So it had that, and then it had these three mailboxes built into the wall there with little buzzers on them. And the front door, made of some sort of material, glass, and it would lock, right? So there was two ways to get into the building. You either used your key and walked in, or if you didn't have a key or you were visiting, you would buzz the apartment 1, 2, or 3, you would buzz that apartment. And if they were home and wanted you to come in, they would buzz and the door would unlock, right? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Anybody else ever have a door like that? Oh, they don't have that in Chicago. Yeah, they have to have that in Chicago. All cities do it right. Right, I mean, that's just like, that's what I grew up with. And I got to tell you, the buzzer was the best part of the thing. Because of the buzzer, I got great memories growing up. Because my mom and I would play a game. Not every day, but a lot of the days. She would not use her key to get in the front door. My mom raised three of us, single mom. So she worked all day. And when we got home from school, we had certain rules. And one of the rules when we lived there was not to wander the streets, and we followed that. And so she would buzz so that I would know she's home. And if she buzzed, that was my key. That was the clue. That was the hint. I was to buzz, and then I was to run, jump over the couch, and cover myself with a blanket and hide. And my mom would walk in, and she would walk in, and first thing she'd do, she'd open the door and say, "Marty, where are you?" And I would just be calm underneath this blanket. And I was hoping mom would think there's this blanket, just this lumpy blanket on the floor for no reason. And if you know my mom, that would never happen, because she never left anything on the floor. And then she'd keep looking for me. You hear her go in the kitchen. She opened the refrigerator. "Marty, are you in here?" And I was still okay. Then she'd come over to the couch. She would look underneath the cushions. "Are you here? Marty, where are you? Marty?" And then she would stand right over me, and I was barely able to contain myself. She called one more time, "Marty, where are you?" By that time, I'm laughing so hard, giggling, so excited. I throw the blanket off of me, and I say, "Here I am, Mom. Here I am." And that was our game of hide and seek. And then as I got older, I realized the rules changed. Because there were some times when I hid that I didn't want my mom to find me. And I always knew those. You know how you know? All three names. Martin, Scott, Rochelle. At any time. If those three names came out in a row, it meant I needed to hide. And if mom found me, there was a price to pay. A penalty would be assessed. Generally, usually, a wooden spoon broken somewhere on my body. And we had the wooden spoon, one of them. That's hide and seek. We played it as a kid. Did anyone not play hide and seek as a kid? So everybody played. Everybody's playing hide and seek, right? I'm assuming the rules in the city are the same as the rules for you guys in Texas, right? One person was it, and that's, you never wanted to be it, but if you were, you were it, and the idea was it would be at home base. For us, home base was a trunk of a car that never moved. When we played hide and seek, the car was home base. When we played stickball, the car was third base. And so that was our base. And the it person would close his eyes and count to 60 Mississippis. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three. And while the it person is counting, the idea was you were to hide. Now, I got to tell you, playing in Brooklyn was great, man, because there was like a ton of hiding places, right? We did have boundaries. You couldn't go into Queens, right? Well, it was only three blocks away, but it sounds better. You can't go into Queens. You can't go in the Bronx. We would never be in the Bronx. No self-respecting Mets fan would. But anyhow, so that's how it was, right? And anybody else do that, right? Is that the right rules, right? And now in the city, there were so many places to hide. Usually the same person who started it would be it the entire game because you never find anybody. Right? And the idea is, while the person's looking for you, you are to run home without them touching you and touch base so you are safe. Right? That's the game. Well, when a game keeps going on and on, it would usually want to quit. Or it'd be time for dinner. Or time for us to get off the streets. And so the it person would stand up on the trunk of the car and at the top of his lungs yell out, "Ali Ali Oxen Free." I don't know what game you're playing. I don't know what Ali Ali Oxen Free is, right? I've Googled it. It does not make any sense. It is not you didn't say that in Chicago, Ali Ali Oxen Free. No, we don't do that. In our world, it was Ali Ali, which I still don't know what that means, all come free, right? Which meant it was code for you can run home and be safe. And there's no penalty to pay, right? That's the game of hide and seek. In the second chapter of Genesis, God, the writer of that chapter, begins to tell how we were created, you and I. And it gives specific details about the way God created humans. And what the writer of Genesis says is God knelt down, formed clay into this being, us, and then breathed into the nostrils and gave life. And the first human was named Adam. Adam is Hebrew for man. So Adam was the first human. And God placed Adam in this beautiful garden. We know it as Eden. And Adam had everything he needed. He was given one rule, not to eat of the tree that stood in the middle of the garden. Adam nodded, okay, I'm in. And then Adam went about his business, and God looked down one day and said, "Oh, Adam's alone. This is not good." So God devised a plan, and all the animals and the birds, while Adam was in the garden, would come before Adam, and Adam had a job of naming them. Like, I can imagine there was one that Adam said, "Well, that looks like a giraffe," and God said, "No, probably hippopotamus." "Well, that's a duck." "Okay, that's a duck." And so it would go on and on for probably days of Adam naming animals. And at the end of the days, God determined there was no suitable helper for Adam. Nobody to partner with that would work. So you know the story, I think, is that God put Adam in a deep sleep and took a rib out of Adam's side and created a new being, a new creature. And when Adam woke up, his job was to name the new being, because that's what he was doing. So he woke up and he saw this person, this woman, and he just said, "Whoa, man." And she was named Woman. Hey, true. It's true. No, seriously, if you look in Hebrew, you guys just don't believe me. Why would I lie about that? If you look in Hebrew, when Adam sees Eve, he uses a play on words of excitement in Hebrew that would translate best to woe man or woman. Google it. I'm fine with you Googling that one. It works. So anyhow, then Adam and Eve were now in this beautiful garden, and every evening, according to the Bible, about 7 o'clock at sunset, God would come down and he would walk and talk with Adam and Eve, and that's where the song came from, Matt, right? And the song is? You're not helping. Okay, never mind. So they would walk, and one day, during the day, Eve got bored, I guess, and a serpent walked up to her. Because in those days, according to Genesis, right, a serpent has legs. And the serpent walks up and strikes up a conversation with her. Now, you and I know you should never have a conversation with a snake, right? But Eve, she was married to Adam. And those of you who are married to men know that men don't always talk that much. And when they do, they generally don't make any sense, right? And so Eve wanted an adult, real conversation. And here was this serpent who was having an adult, real conversation. And they began to talk, and they became friends. And they were having this wonderful thing about recipes. And in the midst of this thing about recipes, the serpent points to the tree that is in the middle of the garden and says, "Hey, have you ever tried that? It makes an apple pie, which is to die for." That's not in there. But I like that one. But Eve said, "Oh no, we eat it. God said we can't even touch it, or else we'll die." And you and I know that's not what God said. God said you just can't eat it. And the serpent said, "Oh no, go ahead. You won't die." And Eve picked the apple off the tree and she bit it. Now, this is where most men start nudging their wives. They say, "See, it's all your fault. If you didn't eat that apple, we'd all be good right now. Right? Broccoli would taste like chicken. Things would be good." But here's the problem with that, guys. If you read the very next line, what did Eve do with the apple after she bit it? She handed it to Adam, and he bit it. Now, hand, which means the whole time Eve is having this conversation with the snake, Adam is standing right there, never stops her, doesn't say a word. And Adam is the one, by the way, who was given the commandment, not Eve, and he probably messed it up in translation, telling Eve anyhow. And when they ate the apple, they realized they were naked, and they hid. Around 7 o'clock that evening, cool of the evening, when God always come down for his walk, He came down and he starts looking. "Adam, where are you? Adam!" Couldn't find him anywhere. He'd walk around the garden. "Adam, where are you?" And finally, when God got right in front of Adam, and God said, "Adam, where are you?" Adam stepped out of the bushes and simply said, "Here I am." And that is the first recorded game of hide and seek. And we have been playing it ever since. God is always it, and we are always hiding. God is always searching for us, longing for us to come home, but we always hide. That is the history of the Bible. If you read from the third chapter of Genesis to the 20th chapter of Revelation, you will find nothing but one giant game of hide and seek. And so the question becomes, why do we hide? What in the world caused Adam to hide in the first place? Yes, I know he disobeyed. Yes, I know he was naked. Yes, I know he sinned. Those are the easy answers. But what was it? Some people say it was pride. Some people say it was greed. Some people say it was lust. Those are all good answers, but I don't think that's the answer. See, for me, I think the answer is found in the thing that has plagued humanity and you and me for forever. It's the need to be in control. See, at that moment, Adam and Eve realized they were not the ones in charge. They were not in control. They were not on the top rung. They were not the big cheese. They were not the big kahuna. They were on the bottom and looking up to God, and they didn't like it. So they decided, they made the choice to take the apple, to be in control, to say to God, I know better than you know what's good for me. And that is the beginning. And we see it again and again and again. If you look in Cain and Abel, Cain wanted to be in control. And so when he found out he wasn't, what did he do? He killed Abel. You look at King David, a man after God's own heart. He sees Bathsheba, a beautiful woman, a woe man, sunbathing. And he wants her, can't have her. He realizes he's not in control. He takes her anyhow. You got Judas, who expected the Messiah to come and to come with swords and flames and to overthrow the government. And when Judas realized he couldn't control Jesus, he betrayed him. Again and again and again. It's our need for control. And the secret, the key is what did Adam say when he was found? Here I am, Lord. Why did you hide? I was afraid. I think that's our thing. When we realize we're not in control, we become afraid and we hide. So maybe the first sin wasn't pride, wasn't greed, wasn't lust. Maybe it was really fear. Which then makes a great philosopher correct. I mean, this is one of the greatest philosophers of all time. Yoda could have easily said, fear is the path to sin. Because fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. I don't like to speak for you. I don't want to pretend I understand your life. But I know in my world, when I turn my back on God, when I'm furthest away from God, when I mess up, when I sin, generally because I'm afraid. I want control, and when I realize I don't have control, I do what I want to do, and then when I realize that, I'm afraid and I hide. I mean, I may not hide in the bushes or hide under a blanket, but I hide. I think it's all about fear. One reason why I think it is every time, if you look in the Bible, nearly every time God appeared, either as God or an angel or messenger of God, his first words were always about calming fears. And nowhere do you find that more than the Christmas story. When Gabriel appeared to Mary, was the first thing he said, do not be afraid, Mary. When the angel appeared to Joseph, was the first thing he said, Joseph, do not be afraid. When the heavenly host appeared to the shepherds that first Christmas night, what was the first words? Fear not, for I have good news of a great joy. It's about God showing up, offering us peace instead of fear, hate, love instead of hate. You know, every time I hear the Christmas story, whether it's out of Luke or out of Matthew, I always just kind of get amazed. because it's an incredible story of a miracle. But I'm not really surprised that the first words that are spoken are, do not be afraid. Fear not. Because, well, that's what Christmas is. Remember the game of hide and seek? God, like God played, God is it. We're always searching. He's always searching for us. Remember that? Well, one day, according to the Bible, on a Thursday night, God gets together with his son, Jesus, and says, hey. One day, God gets together with his son in heaven, the Trinity, and says, hey, I need you to go down to earth. I need you to preach. I need you to teach. I need you to heal so that people see me, so that they're not afraid anymore, that they don't have to hide. And Jesus does. And the word became flesh and dwelt among us, right out of John. And he preaches and he teaches and he heals, and it doesn't work. And so then one Thursday night, God calls Jesus into a garden and says, hey, it's not working. I need you to get to a high place. I need you to yell it from the top of your lungs that people don't have to hide. I want them to know about my love and my grace. And so Jesus climbs this hill called Golgotha. And when he's there, people still don't understand. And so God says to Jesus, okay, well, you got to go a little higher. You got to yell a little louder. And so Jesus climbs this cross and he throws out his arms. And at the top of his lungs, he yells, Ali, Ali, all come free. And the game's over. You don't have to hide. You can come home without a penalty being paid. See, that's, well, to quote another great philosopher, and Charlie Brown, that's what Christmas is about. I want you to take a couple moments, just you and God. And just look, we all hide, and we're all control freaks. If you're not a control freak, then you're lying and hiding by lying. We all want control. We all hide. Well, maybe for just a moment, you can just come clean before God. And just, if you're hiding under a blanket, just take the blanket off of you and stand before God and say, here I am, God, here I am. And God's first words to you should be, do not be afraid, for there is nothing you can do, nothing that's ever going to make God love you less. Take a couple moments. Don't forget tonight, 3, 5, 7, 11, 3 and 11 there, 5 and 7 here. I hope to see you. And if I don't see you, then we'll wish you a Merry Christmas now. But would you receive this benediction? And now may the Lord bless you, may the Lord keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace both now and forever. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, go from this place. And may the peace and the love and the grace of God go with you. And may you know, may you remember, may you never forget that there is nothing you can do, nothing, that will ever make God love you less. Because when God sees us, he doesn't see the mistakes that we make. He simply says, wow, you're nothing but the best of the best of the best. And can you imagine what your day would be like if you lived it believing that? You'd have a pretty good day. Take care. God bless. See you tonight or Merry Christmas.